It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Kevin Brinkley. Kevin is with Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, set to join us in a moment. Andy Levine is CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, says when it comes to CRISPR technology, the Canadians are out in front of the U.S.
Canada, obviously, we all, most of us know, or most of your listeners will know, that they're one of our top, if not the top, trading partner for us in agriculture products. And they just announced a really forward-thinking policy with respect to plant breeding and gene editing, and basically saying that it's no different than conventional breeding as long as there's no foreign genetics in the final product. So it's a very good ruling from the Canadian side, and we sure would like to see the U.S. Government and policymakers follow their lead.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Kevin Brinkley. Kevin is CEO, Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, PCCA. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tony. It is really good to be here, especially I got a lot more hope than we did last year when we spoke at this time with some good weather.
You know, it's amazing how the tide has turned, and I use that very carefully because there are some areas where fields are actually seeing some white caps because of standing water. But we've come a long way in the last 3, 6 months, even a year, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I'll start off by just acknowledging that rain in any form, you know, is better than no rain. And we are very sensitive to the fact that some folks have had a lot to deal with and are probably trying to figure out what to do. But in general, if you're just looking at the entire Southwest cotton producing region, it's certainly a lot better off than it was a year ago. I don't think that, you know, anybody would say, well, the drought is over with. You look at the drought maps, you know, they're still showing some drought, but we think that, you know, this is probably the beginnings of the shift in the pattern. And fortunately, it's, you know, it's come much sooner than we thought it would. And so that may mean that we have a better production year.
Now, we were dealing with some, I guess we can look at the economics of the cotton market. Again, about a year ago, we're talking about, you know, some really good prices. We've seen those retreat back into the 70s, some into the 80s as well. And I know there's a lot of unknowns at this point, but is that something you're kind of keeping an eye on, where we could be going with this December 23 cotton contract?
Indeed it is. It's you know, if you kind of look at where USDA has forecast prices for the 23 crop, they predict that cotton prices will average about 78 cents a pound, and that is not terribly exciting news to anyone that grows cotton because of the cost of production. But we have to acknowledge that there's this tug of war in the futures market. First of all, it's very thinly traded at the moment compared to where it normally is. So the number of folks that have investments either as a hedger or a speculator is down from where it typically is. And that means that people are not interested in getting too committed one way or the other. So you've seen this trading range between the high 70s and the high 80s. And it's just kind of a tug of war, if you want to think of it that way. You know, you've got honestly some pretty tight stock scenarios in some countries around the world. The U.S. would be, I think, considered one of those. On the other hand, you've got, you know, recession fears that are out there. And so, you know, when you have the Federal Reserve, you know, they don't even know what to do with interest rates because of these same factors. You know, it makes for some very interesting work trying to predict where prices are going to go. But, again, I think if you're a producer, you've got to hope that they move higher because of the cost of growing cotton.
Well, and some of that is dealing with our trading partners and just maybe general economies around the world. But anytime we're talking about cotton and buyers and price, China really works its way back into that conversation, doesn't it?
It does. They still use roughly about one out of every three bales in the world is consumed by China. So that is a lot of concentration risk with one country. And, you know, I think most growing regions of the world are trying to figure out how to deal with that. You know, for the U.S. and our part, we're looking at ways to build up other markets. And because of some of the geopolitical tensions with China that I think are probably going to persist for the next few years. But right now they have to be dealt with. And they have actually stepped back into the market for U.S. cotton. We got an export sales report this morning that China was the biggest buyer by far in that list. And, you know, we have to acknowledge that they're very important to the income picture for our growers. So you look at China and you say, okay, well, what's going on with their economy? They were in lockdown for a lot longer than we were in most other world economies, and they've started to relax that over the last 2 to 3 months. And we had hoped to see more buying out of them as they came out of lockdown. And it's been a little bit behind pace from what we had hoped for. I think their mills are starting to use cotton at a rapid pace, and I think that's the reason for some of the buying we've seen in our export sales reports over the last few weeks. Probably, you know, a bit more to go in terms of their domestic consumers actually buying cotton and really kind of lighting a fire under the market. So we're hopeful that they do that while acknowledging that we have to work on other markets as well so that we can get the best possible price for our producers.
And when you look at those other markets, you know, we've got some out there, India, just trying to remember off the top of my head, Vietnam's in there as well. How's the rest of the world looking?
Well, I think everybody is starting to return to, I guess, what we could call pre-pandemic consumption levels, or working their way back in that direction, with one notable exception, which is Turkey. Turkey, of course, had a devastating earthquake that took out a large share of their textile industry a couple of months ago. And so it's going to be a while before they get back online. So that has definitely hurt their consumption as a top market for U.S. cotton. But if you look at others, you know, like Bangladesh, for example, is not a place that most people would, you know, aspire to go on vacation to. But they are using a lot of cotton because that is the bulk of how they generate their GDP, their economic growth. And so, you know, they use about, you know, 7.5 million bales of cotton in that little tiny country. So that's one that we kind of cautiously work with, because you want to make sure when you sell cotton, you get paid for it. And that's caused us to be really careful about what we do there. But it is important. Vietnam, as you mentioned, is always important. And you look at other places, you know, India is a good one to highlight. They actually use, you know, 23 million bales of cotton there. And so that is a big economy to deal with. And even though they grow a lot of cotton, some of the cotton that they need for their textile industry is exactly what we produce here. So very important markets. Pakistan, again, not a place that most people travel to, but is very important to our growers because they use a lot of our cotton.
We've talked about this in the past, and I'm just, you know, thinking back to some concerns about recession a year ago. Are those still there, both domestically and internationally?
You know, the short answer is yes. I would say that probably we see an elevated risk of recession just because of, again, the increased cost of doing business for companies around the world. You know, if you look at some of the, you know, the margins that are being squeezed because of increased labor cost, higher interest rates, all the things that the Fed is trying to do to contain inflation are probably going to work, and we're probably going to be uncomfortable with the way it works for a while. So, you know, here in the U.S., I think the economy is very strong, but you know, we're seeing, you know, beginning cracks, at least in parts of the economy. So when that hits the labor markets, you know, like today you had an increase in the unemployment rate, even though the economy had created a whole lot of jobs. So I think that means more people are coming back into the labor force because they're worried about income. And so that same phenomenon could be any developed country in the world, and certainly the developing ones are always fighting those pressures. But those all have a big impact on demand for goods, and cotton is no exception to that. Even though folks have to buy clothes, it is somewhat of a discretionary purchase. And, you know, when it comes to a choice between absolute necessities, we hope cotton makes its way up the list. But when you look at it next to food and fuel and shelter, a lot of times those things are what gets chosen at the front of the line. So that could have affect us in terms of how many bales we use and what the market is. But hopefully whatever it is that happens as a recession will be short-lived and shallow in nature.
Okay, Kevin, we're almost out of time, but a quick opportunity to talk a little more about PCCA and Plains Cotton Cooperative Association. You're really involved in quite a few portions of the cotton industry. What's the elevator speech there?
Well, we are involved in a lot of things, but at the heart of this organization, we are a grower-owned marketing cooperative. So our growers, it's a pretty simple business model. Our growers entrust us to market their cotton. We do that. So it's its most valuable form, and we deduct the cost of doing business, and we send them all the profits. So we have pool marketing. We have forward contracts. We have a large cash trading operation for those that want to hold, you know, sell their cotton at harvest or afterwards. And so we've got several tools that do all of those things, and our team would love the chance to talk to any cotton farmer about what we offer, and especially the chance to be an owner of PCCA.
Online, PCCA.com. Kevin Brinkley is CEO of Plains Cotton Cooperative Association on today's Agribusiness Report.
There's a tradition down here in the South, a tradition of hard work, a tradition of straight talk. For more than 100 years, Delta Pine Cotton has been a proud part of that tradition. With proven yield potential and genetics you won't find anywhere else, Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine Brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Kevin Brinkley with Plains Cotton Cooperative Association.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Kevin Brinkley, Plains Cotton Cooperative Association online, pcca.com.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
There's a tradition down here in the South. A tradition of hard work. A tradition of straight talk. For more than 100 years, Delta Pine Cotton has been a proud part of that tradition. With proven yield potential and genetics you won't find anywhere else, Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine Brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Agribusiness Report. Has the Farm Bill outlived its usefulness? Bart Fisher is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M on an editorial in the Washington Post.
Yes, I will address it, which is funny, too, because they suggest that a small little group of people sit around and pass and write U.S. farm policy. I just finished teaching a semester. Final exams tomorrow with almost 200 students who went through this very issue, you know, right? And for folks in agriculture, they are very aware, well aware of this. I mean, yes, we've had farm bills for almost 100 years, you know, right at 90 years. Yeah. We've been doing farm policy. But the reason why we do them regularly, almost every 5 years, is to update it, to keep it relevant to what's going on. And if you stack them side by side, even though it's a convenient talking point, a nice soundbite, the current farm bill looks nothing like the original farm bills, with very few exceptions. And so, no, in a word, yeah. No.